जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जयो राधा जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जना वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी, गोपी जना वल्लभ गोपी जना वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी, गोपी जना वल्लभ यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोदानंदन व्रज यमुना तीरावनचारी, यमुना यमुना तीरावनचारियम, जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जयो जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर श्री श्रीमद्भिष्ट फाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की, जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर श्री श्रीमद्भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की, अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की, रामाचार्य श्रील हरिदास ठाकुर की, प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद की, मथुरा वृंदावन धाम की, पुरुषोत्तम श्रेष्ठ जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की, गंगा मैया यमुना मैया की, वृंद देवी तुलसी महारानी की, कलियुग पावन हरिनाम संकीर्तन की, निताई गौर प्रेमानंदे, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री गुरु and Shri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जायामुदीरये। हरे कृष्णा, वेलकम एवरीवन। सो टुडे वी आर स्टार्टिंग द डिस्कशन ऑन श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर वन श्लोक वन राजोवाच प्रियवतो भगवता आत्मा राम कथम मुने गृहे रमता यन्मूल कर्म बंध पराभव राजोवाच प्रियवतो भगवत आत्मा रामः कथं मुने गृहे अरमत यन्मूलः कर्मबन्धः प्रभावः राजोवाच प्रियव्रतो भागवत आत्मा रामः कथं मुने गृहे रमत यन्मूल कर्मबन्ध पराभवः पराभवः राजोवाच प्रियव्रतो भागवत आत्मा रामः कथं मुने गृहे रमत यन्मूलः कर्मबन्धः पराभवः राजोवाच प्रियवतो भागवत कर्मबन्ध पराभवः माताजी राजोवाच किं परीक्षित सेट् प्रियव्रतः किं प्रियव्रत भागवतः द ग्रेट डिवोटी आत्मा आरामः हु टेक्स प्लेजर इन सेल्फ रियलाइजेशन कथम वाय मुने ओ ग्रेट सेज गृहे एट होम अरमत एंजॉयड यंत मूलः हैविंग विच एज द रूट कॉज Karma Bandha, the bondage of fruitive activities. Parabhavaha, the defeat of one's human mission. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. King Parikshit inquired from Shukdev Goswami, O great sage, why did King Priyavrat, who was great, self-realized devotee of the Lord, remain in household life, which is the root cause of the bondage of karma, fruitive activities, and which defeats the mission of human life? Purport. In the fourth canto, Srila Shukadev Goswami explains that Narad Muni perfectly instructed King Priyavrat about the mission of human life. The mission of human life is to realize one's self and then gradually go back home, back to Godhead. Since Narad Muni instructed the king fully on this subject, why did he again enter household life, which is the main cause of material bondage? Maharaj Parikshit was greatly astonished that King Priyavrat remained in household life, especially since he was not only a self-realized soul, but also a first-class devotee of the Lord. A devotee actually has no attraction for household life. But surprisingly, King Priyavrat enjoyed household life very much. One may argue, why is it wrong to enjoy household life? The reply is that in household life, one becomes bound by the results of fruitive activities. The essence of household life is sense enjoyment. And as long as one engrosses his mind in working hard for sense enjoyment, one becomes bound by reactions of fruitive activities. This ignorance of self-realization is the greatest defeat in human life. The human form of life is especially meant for getting out of the bondage of fruitive activities. But as long as one is forgetful of his life's mission and acts like an ordinary animal, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, he must continue his conditioned life of material existence. Such a life is called Swarupa Vismriti, forgetfulness of one's real constitutional position. Therefore, in Vedic civilization, one is trained in the very beginning of life as a brahmachari. A brahmachari must execute austerities and refrain from sex indulgence. Therefore, if one is completely trained in the principles of brahmacharya, he generally does not enter household life. He is then called a naishtika brahmachari, which indicates total celibacy. King Parikshit was thus astonished that the great King Priyavrat, although trained in the principles of Naishtika Brahmacharya, entered household life. The words Bhagavata Atmaramaha are very significant in this verse. If one is self-satisfied, as is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is called Bhagavata Atmaramaha. There are different types of satisfactions. Karmis are satisfied in their fruitive activities. Gyanis are satisfied to merge into the effulgence of Brahman. And devotees are satisfied to engage in Lord's service. The Lord is self-satisfied because he is fully opulent. And one who is satisfied by serving him is called Bhagavata Atmaramaha. Manushyanam sahasreshu. Out of many thousands of persons, one may endeavor for liberation. And out of many thousands of persons attempting to become liberated, one may achieve liberation from the anxieties of material existence and become self-satisfied. Even that satisfaction, however, is not the ultimate satisfaction. The jnanis and the karmis have desires, as do the yogis, but the devotees have no desires. Satisfaction in the service of the Lord is called akama, freedom from desire. And this is the ultimate satisfaction. Therefore, Maharaj Parikshit inquired, how could one who was fully satisfied on the highest platform be satisfied with family life? The word parabhavaha in this verse is also significant. When one is satisfied in family life, he is doomed because he must already have forgotten his relationship with the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj describes how the activities of family life implicate one more and more. Atmapatam griha andakupam. Household life is like a dark well. If one falls into this well, his spiritual death is assured. How Priyavrat Maharaj remained a liberated Paramahamsa even within family life is described in the next verse. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam yena bhutale Swayam rupa kadamayam Dadati swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru श्रीजुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातां सहगना रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवम् श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगनाललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कान्ता राधाकान्ता नमोऽस्तु ते तप्त काञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन्निति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंदा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामो 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 हरे हरे Hare Krishna, welcome everyone. So, very auspicious beginning to fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam today. And grateful and fortunate to be given this opportunity. So, Prabhupada's purport actually leaves nothing to be spoken. Prabhupada explains it so profoundly and in a prolific way that the whole understanding between progress in spiritual life as being the only real goal of human life, how important it is and how dangerous it is to get distracted by anything else other than pure Krishna consciousness. So what we'll essentially do today is we'll just unpack Srila Prabhupada's purport, because Prabhupada very beautifully touches upon all the aspects of devotional service. And this being the first shloka, I also get the privilege of giving an overview, taking upon the sections of future speakers with due permission. Because, you know, we cannot just leave the discussion at the question itself. Yes, Parikshit Maharaj was astonished. But then how do we understand what led to his astonishment and what is the right understanding? We'll discuss an overview today, and then the speakers in the days ahead will get into the details of this discussion. So let's start with the context. Fourth canto was essentially talking of the descendants of Swayambhu Manu, his daughters, and then his first son Uttanapad, and then Priyavrat. So all the descendants were spoken of except Uttanapad, except Priyavrat. In fact, Uttanapad, Dhruva, and then Dhruva Maharaj's descendants were spoken of in detail till the Prachetas. So it is said there were so many 24 generations after Prithu Maharaj, Parachini Bharishad came and then took the reins of the kingdom, and his sons were the 10 Prachetas. So till that time, everything was good. And we have to understand the context of who these people are. Swayambhu Manu is a Prajapati. He is the direct son of Swayambhu Manu with a very specific mission of populating the world, because that's the role of Prajapatis. So that is their primary responsibility, and that is the exact will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna has specifically appointed Brahmaji for a specific role, and Brahmaji has specifically delegated some responsibility to his key descendants. So that becomes their cardinal duty to perform. So in this context, we should see today's shloka. So till the time the Prachetas were ruling, there was no problem. So it is said that till that time, King Priyavrat was having a good time in self-realization, hearing from Narad Muni and practicing direct bhakti, experiencing self-realization, and Bhagavata, he's called a Bhagavat, and Atmarama, because he was completely self-satisfied in self-realization. But what happened is that after the Prachetas, they could not find a suitable king. So it was in this extraordinary circumstances that Swayambhu Manu requested King Priyavrat to assume responsibility of the kingdom. So this is a circumstantial case. We should not generalize out of context. And although his father, Swayambhu Manu, requested, Priyavrat Maharaj was not in the mood to accept that instruction. He could not deny it, because it was coming from his father, who is his superior. But as we will see soon, he also did not welcome it. So that kind of hesitation or not having that eagerness to accept worldly responsibilities, engage with material affairs, that is a hallmark of great devotees. Vidura is an excellent example also. So such people, because they are already relishing a superior taste, param drishtva nivartate, they are already in resonance with Krishna and Krishna seva. So they are engaged in whatever they are doing because of certain circumstances and certain requirements. But if given an opportunity, they would be happy to give it away. As they say, at the drop of a hat. What does that mean? I mean, even if there is not sufficient reason, they are ready to let go and move on. That is their readiness to get done with this material affairs. Because they know that it is entangling and it has no taste. Right? Then, which are these different categories of people and how do they engage with their worldly duties and responsibilities? That we will touch upon in today's discussion. So such people, Atmaramaha, like Vidura, they are eager to step away from this worldly responsibilities. In contrast to the materialistic ambitions of the attached, who want to gain greater influence and greater power. That's their pursuit, that's their career progression. How can I gain more influence? How can I gain greater status? Because they have not tasted anything higher. And this is in exact contrast to that. So, now, fifth canto begins with the discussion of the other son of Swayambhu Manu, King Priyavrat, and fifth canto is very interesting. It touches upon, it first will describe Rishabhdev and his beautiful instructions to his sons. Then we'll see the amazing story of Bharat Maharaj. And the later section of fifth canto is obviously the Vedic cosmology. So very deep lessons ingrained in all of this. So now let's start with the predicament that Parikshit Maharaj is facing, that Priyavrat Maharaj, because he received direct instructions on self-realization from Narad Muni, he was detached from this worldly entanglement and enjoyment. Then how did he again become attached and then again become detached? What is going on? So that astonished Parikshit Maharaj, and he's putting forward that question to Shukdev Goswami. So, how can Now let us discuss philosophically. Is this even possible? If somebody has no attachment to material enjoyment, can they become attached again? And if so, what can save them from that attachment again? So this is something which is very relevant for all of us in the practice of bhakti. We gain experience, we gain realization, we develop some knowledge and detachment as the byproducts of bhakti. But then we again get attached. Why do we get attached? Are there some specific scientific reasons? And if so, how can we come out of it? That is the whole synopsis of this scenario of Priyavrat Maharaj. So the principle is essentially that devotional service, because Jiva, Ishvara and their connection, these three things are eternal. Right? Jiva, Ishvara and Bhakti. All these three are eternally transcendental. So if we come in touch with Krishna and perform bhakti, we also are at the transcendental level. Right? So bhakti can never be contaminated from its transcendental nature. The jiva can be contaminated by the influence of the gunas, but bhakti will always be pure and transcendental. This is the principle. So bhakti cannot be covered by material influences. So if bhakti is born in the heart of a jiva, rest is Krishna's assurance to protect. That spark of bhakti. Because we have come in touch with something transcendental, by nature of it, by its own nature, it will protect itself. How amazing is that? Somebody who has once tasted Krishna's sweetness and taken shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, they have ignited the spark of bhakti, which is transcendental. Rest is the job of bhakti itself. Because it is transcendental, it cannot be impeded or stopped by anything material. So, how does the scenario play out in Priyavrat Maharaj's case? He did not want to enter a life of material enjoyment, but he accepted the request of his superiors. His father, Swayambhu Manu, his grandfather and the creator, Brahmaji. And guess who Brahmaji had brought along with him for convincing Priyavrat Maharaj? All the great rishis. And the Vedas personified. So Brahmaji is making sure that Priyavrat Maharaj should not think that what I am presenting is out of scriptures. If Vedas personified are supporting me, then you have no case to argue. So Priyavrat Maharaj was caught in a very difficult situation. So then Brahmaji very beautifully balances the reason for engaging in this material world. So if there is a solid reason given by Narad Muni to not entangle oneself in material activities, then Brahmaji, also speaking from the scriptures, gives an equally solid reason for engaging and the right way to engage. So it is... And why should Priyavrat Maharaj agree to Brahmaji's proposal? Because as we will see, Brahmaji is just saying that I am doing my duty which has been given to me by the Creator. I am not doing anything independently or out of scriptures. So therefore what I am recommending is for your benefit. And it can never lead to your entanglement. That's the essence of his preaching. So, interestingly, when Priyavrat Maharaj will finally accept the instructions of Brahmaji, what will happen? The first thing to happen is, guess what? Swayambhu Manu will himself leave for the forest. So, he gets his son appointed on throne and then he then leaves for the forest. So, the principle that Priyavrat Maharaj is following is correct, but the situation might demand him to act differently. He's not wrong in not accepting Swayambhu Manu's proposal at the start. And in fact, later on when Priyavrat Maharaj has sons, out of 10 sons, 3 of his sons will accept sannyas. So the principle is always cardinal, it's unchangeable. That engaging with material affairs entangles, and self-realization is the best way to live this human life. That's the entire goal of human life. So Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada touches on many beautiful points in this purport. We will see, elaborate on a few of them. So now when Parikshit Maharaj is astonished on Priyavrat Maharaj accepting household life. What is that household life? It is Griha Vratanam. Those who take a vow of living a life of family affairs. It is not Grihastha Ashram. How is it different? The basis of a Griha Vrata is to further the cause of bodily needs and bodily enjoyment. Whereas a Grihastha Ashram is not based on bodily needs and bodily enjoyment. It has a very different purpose, we will see that. So, the essence of household life, which is criticized here, which is Griha Vrata, the essence of that household life is sense enjoyment. And as long as one engrosses his mind in working hard for sense enjoyment, that is what entangles one in the reaction of work. Right? What have we seen in the Bhagavad Gita about this? That who is a sannyasi? Beautifully chapters, in fact, throughout the entire Bhagavad Gita, but specifically in chapters 3 to 5, Lord Krishna beautifully dissects and distinguishes what is sannyas and what is karma. So in 4th chapter, 41st shloka, Lord Krishna defines what is the meaning of sannyasa. Yoga sanyasta karmani jnana sanchinna samshaya atmavantam na karmani nibadnanti dhananjaya. So if one acts in this world, giving up attachment to the fruits of action. So the purpose is not enjoyment. And they are acting out of knowledge of self-realization, that I am a soul and I am a part and parcel of Ishvara, and therefore my position or nature is to serve Ishvara. So acting in this knowledge without attachment to fruits, anyone who lives their life like this is a sannyasi. So sannyas is a spirit. Sannyas is not a dress. Sannyas is not an action. He is not bound by the reactions of work. Lord Krishna is clearly highlighting to Arjuna that if you act in this way, so what is Parikshit Maharaj's fear in this scenario? That Priyavrat Maharaj will get entangled in reactions of his work, right? But here, the definition of karma yoga is given that even if you act, you will not be entangled. That's the beauty. It's inaction in action. So Bhagavad Gita beautifully explained this, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the case study on how great devotees have lived their life based on these principles. So we can understand Bhagavad Gita through the lives of these great devotees of the Lord. So it's actually a topic of deep deliberation, because when we relish spiritual realization, we have a tendency to develop indifference from the world. But there also needs certain responsibilities to be taken, certain examples to be demonstrated. So how should we act? So it is confusing. Therefore, these chapters, we need to go back and forth and then come to a conclusive, distilled understanding with the guidance of our seniors. So when this chapter 41 shloka, it says, acting in knowledge without attachment leads to liberation. So what is the fear in acting? So if somebody is convinced of this, that is what Brahmaji is saying. Act on my instruction, and I am the co-creator, I am the secondary creator. I am doing everything on the instruction of Krishna. he has told me to create and populate. So help me in this, and if you do this, you are not doing karma, you are doing a karma. What is the difference? It is not your personal desire. As simple as that. Till the time we pursue our personal desire or personal interest, we attract reaction and therefore implication. The day we stop acting according to our personal whimsical desire, that is inaction. We are already in a liberated state. Iha yasya harir dasya karmana manasagira nikilasu api avastasu jivan mukta sauchyate. So while living in this world also one can be liberated if you don't act whimsically, if you act in alignment with the instructions of the creator. Very simple to understand. If in a government, if a citizen lives by the laws, they don't need to see the prison anytime. They don't need to be... prison is equivalent of getting entangled. If somebody is a law-abiding citizen, they don't need to fear the police or worry about being imprisoned. Who has that fear? Somebody who is pursuing a separate interest. What are they called? Separatists. Who have an idea which is different from that of the state. They don't respect the state. They don't want to follow the state. They want to overthrow the state. So they are separatists. So if we live a life like a separatist, having desires separate from Krishna's plan, that attracts karma. This comes so often in Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhinna drik. One who has separate vision from Krishna. So if we don't have a separate vision, we don't need to worry about attracting reaction. Next, in 5th chapter, 6th shloka, it says that if inaction without purification, if you think that I don't want to get entangled, let me run away into the forest. But the whole problem, Lord Krishna says in the Gita, you might avoid marriage with a wife, but you are married to your mind. And that married family you are taking to the forest. So the problem is not in marriage, problem is in purification. Wherever you are, try for purification, not for escapism. So we don't want to take the difficult path of purification because it disturbs our conditioning. We are in a comfort zone where we like to act according to our swabhava. I have a certain nature, I have certain likes, dislikes. I want to follow those likes and dislikes. It is whimsical. If you study Bhagavad Gita chapters 13 to 15, it talks of the three doers. Jiva, Prakriti and Ishvara. Such a mind-blowing concept. If you understand where are your desires coming from, where are our material desires coming from, what do you think? So whatever desires we have, Prabhupada says in this purport, even the karmis, yogis, jnanis, they all have desires. Only a devotee does not have desires. So if we have to think, where are our material desires coming from, what will you answer? Modes, okay. See, I mean, how? If you can also explain a little bit. At a practical level. True, true. The gunas influence us and we act accordingly like a puppet in the hands of the puppeteer. Anything else? Yeah, that is the ultimate root cause. Because we are Krishna Vimukha, therefore we develop a desire to enjoy. But I'm also trying to look for something else. Where do our material desires come from? Okay, identification. I expected something better. Misidentification. Yeah, see, that is all avidya, asmita, raga, dvesh, abhinivesh. That cycle is there. Yes, please. Right.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. We cannot become desireless. That's the pursuit of jnanis and impersonalists who want to become like a stone. We don't have any desire to become a stone. Correct. Perfect. Perfect. I'll just give names to your answer. Where our material desires are coming from is Swabhava. And what we should be acting out of is Swarupa. Let me explain. So if I tell you, if I offer you a dish of food and I say it is called kimchi, what will come in your mind? Will you like it or will you dislike it? Will you want it or will you not want it? Shambhir bro, if I offer you kimchi? What will you feel? Nothing. Nothing. That is the answer. If we don't have impressions of previous enjoyment, we cannot get desires. It is a Chinese dish called kimchi. Because we are not Chinese, we don't know what it means. So we cannot have hate or attraction to it. All our desires are born from previous impressions of enjoyment, vasanas. Vasana lead to having like or dislike. If I have experienced rasgulla, out of that will come either a like or dislike. If I've experienced a vada pav, from that will come like or dislike. So out of every interaction of sense and sense object, one is we get reaction, but the bigger problem in that sense object interaction is impressions are formed. And that impressions keep on adding. They become our alter ego. Like layers and layers of impressions. How many impressions we would have gathered in so many countless lives? And those impressions form likes. Usme se our attachment or attraction or hate is born from those impressions. I love rasgulla, I hate vada pav. Where did this come from? From our experiences. And from that, material desires are born. So, chapters 13 to 15, the Jnana section of the Gita, they teach us to see that me, the pure soul, is not my swabhava. I am the jiva. I am not this huge, giant alter ego of vasanas. Right? Are you able to visualize that whatever desires are coming from the interaction of sense and sense objects. Sense is material. Sense objects are material. They are all prakriti. Where is me? Where is the jiva? Shuddhosi, buddhosi. The soul is pure. It is uncontaminated. So when we start seeing distance between our swabhava and ourselves, then we can cultivate detachment. Oh my God, it is not my desire. It is a desire generated from... It's a consequence of my previous wrongdoing. All the trash that I have accumulated. Out of that, something is coming out. I don't need to fulfill it. It's a game somebody is inviting us to play, and we cannot, you know, we can choose, like virtual reality. You enter into that virtual reality of your swabhava, and then see, there is a friend, you have a house, you have a mission to kill somebody. But if you take virtual reality too seriously, so much so that you don't want to come back into real life, then that is called conditioning. Living in virtual reality is equivalent to acting according to our swabhava. What is the hope for us if we are already entrapped in that virtual reality and are enjoying it? Krishna's mercy. The only thing that we have is our intelligence and Krishna's merciful nature. By His merciful nature, Krishna has provided us scriptures and devotees. And He takes incarnations again and again. So the idea is, He cannot force us because that will be breach of free will. So what He does is, He encourages us to use our intelligence, not in the service of swabhava, but in the study of scripture. Once we use our intelligence to gain jnana, not dry renunciation. I'm not talking of jnana yoga. I'm talking of bhakti, favorable jnana, sambandha jnana. So we should use our intelligence to cultivate sambandha jnana and therefore override our svabhava. And as Madhav Prem Prabhu said, we are not supposed to act according to our svabhava. It is like somebody cheating you or making you believe and acting and making you act out of, like somebody schemes you. There is a scam. Everything that they have created is a scam and they want you to enter into that scam. That's what Prakriti is doing. You can say, I don't want to subscribe to this scam anymore. This is a fraud. Living according to our svabhava is a fraud because it will never end. Anadi karma phale. So when we step out by using our intelligence by understanding sambandha jnana, then how will we act? As Prabhu said, we will act according to our swarupa. And the desire of the soul in its purest form is nothing but service to Krishna. That is the whole game of getting free from this entanglement. So, somebody who has understood this, they do not act to enjoy or exploit. They act only to get disentangled. That is how yogis live. They live in this world, but their purpose is purification, not enjoying the fruits of their work. But again, what we are practicing is not the path of socially disengaged life. We are not going into the forest. We are living a very active life. Even us who are in the Brahmacharya ashram, it is a life of social engagement because we are living in this world and having responsibilities and duties and have to follow instructions. So this is a socially engaged varnashram. Bhakti is that beautiful opportunity to be socially engaged and still gain liberation. Theoretically, jnana and yoga, the path of jnana and yoga, it appears that we should, it's very easy, just socially disengage yourself, cultivate self-realization and get liberated. Lord Krishna says when you start doing it, you understand it's not practical. Because there is no nourishment. How long can you remain dry and detached? You will become a stone cold, you'll develop a stone cold heart. And therefore then your life will be directionless. I mean, I'm saying this from the interaction I have with some people who are pursuing that path. Because they don't acknowledge the reality of this world. They say, Brahma Satya Jagat Mithya. So if this world is illusory, how can you engage in this world? Their philosophy does not allow any interaction, any dealing, any celebration, any emotion. I don't choose to live such a life, such a spiritual life also. I mean, it is not inviting. Whereas bhakti, the path of bhakti, allows us to resolve this dichotomy of how not to get entangled and still completely use this social platform as a field of your realization. Like a jnani, when a jnani is in forest, that is the platform of their realization. They are getting realizations and experiences. For a devotee, who is a perfect karma yogi, by the way, by performing service, the devotee is getting the same kind of platform of self-realization. They don't need to be in the forest. Being engaged in Krishna Seva, they are getting the same experience. What is that perfect resolution given by our acharyas? What is the perfect way to live in this world? Rukta Vairagya. We don't realize how amazing a concept it is. Like Lord Chaitanya presented Achintya Bheda Bheda, it resolves the timeless debate between the Bheda Shrutis and the Abheda Shruti. Similarly, the Goswamis, from the teachings of Lord Chaitanya himself, they have given us such a distilled wisdom. It resolves all these controversies. Should I act? Should I take responsibility? Should I detach? All of that is answered if you understand Rupa Goswami's presentation. What does he say? Anasaktasya vishayan yataram upayunjate. So, first qualification to practice Yukta Vairagya is detachment. You cannot have a desire to enjoy something, and so Prabhupada says, before Yukta Vairagya comes Vairagya. So sometimes in overzealousness, we try to bring down the principle of Yukta Vairagya to our level. That is very dangerous. There was a great philosopher, a great guru who tried to do this, who said there is nothing wrong. Just engage with the world. And if I say too much, you will identify him. The idea was, I was hearing Maharaj's class that, in fact, it will come later in Daksha's story only. That Daksha's sons, Narad Muni preached to them and they left for the forest. And then the next set of their brothers also Narad Muni dispatched to the forest. So Daksha accused Narad Muni that you are doing disservice to them because they have not seen this material world. How can they develop detachment? Then Narad Muni presents his point that, do you think by experiencing this world, everyone will develop detachment from it? We might go through a miserable experience, but still keep going through it again and again. Why? Because we are attached. So experience is not the guarantee for realization. Detachment and knowledge is the way of getting realization. Otherwise, we'll keep going through the same experience again and again. Punah punas charvita charvaranam. So, being detached from enjoying the objects of this world and having an attitude to engage them in Krishna service. For that, what do we need? First of all, we need devotion to Krishna. Otherwise, how will we feel like engaging everything in Krishna service? And what is a beautiful example of devotion? A mother, when she learns to, when she wants to feed her family and, you know, really please them, she goes out of her way to learn so many dishes. Learn Chinese, learn continental, and then gather the best ingredients, and then make it in the most elaborate way, and then serve it to her family. Where is that expertise coming from? She might be an expert cook, but she is better than a professional chef. Why? Because that is born out of her love for her family. So when we have love for Krishna, we can be the most expert. And that expertise will come from the right motivation of having to please Krishna rather than having to prove our supremacy or impress the world. So if devotion is missing, then everything else will. If we have wrong association, a wrong conception, everything we'll do will also based on that. Like in a mathematical calculation, if the initial assumptions are wrong, everything else you do will also be wrong. So point is developing devotion. Everything else will follow. Janayati ashu vairagyam. Jnana will come, vairagya will come. Just develop devotion to Krishna. And that is what Priyavrat Maharaj had by the blessings of Narad Muni. And because he had gained it, Lord is saying, you will never lose it. That's the beauty. So, how are different categories of people who some are engaging, some are not engaging? How should we really understand this? So, at least according to Srila Baladev Vidya Bhushan, we'll end with this discussion. Three categories of seekers or spiritualists are defined by Srila Baladev Vidya Bhushan. One is Sanishta, second is Parinishtita, and third is Nirapeksha. Discussing this will clarify the whole discussion about engaging, taking responsibility, or not accepting Varnashram responsibilities. So yes, the whole point that Brahmaji is trying to make in his presentation is, Priyavrat, you want to act independently, but all of us have got a certain body because of our karma. Right? Okay, so there is also this argument. Should our varnashram be decided by our birth? How many feel that birth is a criteria in deciding our varnashram? Or no birth? How does one get a certain birth? It is not random, right? What is the basis of one's birth? Previous karma. So if birth is already based on previous karma, why cannot we use birth as a criteria for deciding varnashram? Exactly, that is the answer. So we gain a birth depending on our previous guna and karma. But having been born in a certain situation, I can change my guna and karma. That is the power a jiva has. That is the basis of Lord Chaitanya's philosophy. Kiba vipra kiba nyasi shudra kenanava. Yehi Krishna tattva veti sei guru hoy. It is not important how you started. It is more important on where you want to be. If you are so dynamic, somebody is in a family of Shudra, but they have developed Brahmanical qualities. Are Namacharya. So where is the question of birth? So, Prabhupada says this school of thought is better, that Varnashram should not be based on birth. It should be based on one's guna and karma. What nature has somebody developed? What inclinations or desires have they cultivated? That is more important in deciding where in the Varnashram should be fit. And Brahmaji is basically saying, because you are born with certain guna and karma, to purify that guna and karma, you will need to identify yourself in a place in the Varnashram. Don't escape that purification process. So, I mean, both points, both sides have their logic, but because Brahmaji is saying this, and he's also the creator, and Priyavrat Maharaj has to respect him. But with the assurance that bhakti will never be covered, Priyavrat Maharaj takes that plunge into headlong plunge into taking material responsibilities. So, yes, we need to act according to our Varnashrama, because Varnashram will purify us, but that's not the highest teaching. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Eya Bahaya. Then what is superior than Varnashram? Something has to be more, having a greater purification power than Varnashram. We cannot bypass purification, you agree? Otherwise, we'll be hypocrites. And Lord Krishna says, I respect a sweeper in the street more than a charlatan meditator. So purification cannot be bypassed. Varnashram purification is limited. And then therefore, what is more purifying than Varnashram? Bhakti. Shuddhyante tasmai prabhavishnave namaha. Coming in touch with the most pure can purify us like nothing else. Nihara iva bhaskara. This is what the example that Shukdev Goswami gives when he tries to compare how much can each process purify. Karma can purify, but it'll again come. It is like bathing off an elephant. Jnana can purify, but the seeds will not be destroyed. Again, they will come. But when bhakti purifies, it purifies forever. Like when the sun rises, the dew cannot remain. So that is the purifying power of bhakti. And with that assurance, when we make bhakti our primary process of purification, and Varnashram as the secondary, that is what Srila Baladev Vidya Bhushan categorizes as parinishtita. Parinishtit bhakta is doing their Varnashram duties, but their Varnashram duties are not primary. They are not dependent on their Varnashram duties, and they are not enjoying their Varnashram duties. They are not getting indulgence or gratification or even purification from Varnashram duties. They are doing it because it needs to be demonstrated. Tomorrow, if their Varnashram duties come in the way of their bhakti, what do you think they will give away? Varnashram duties. That is parinishtita bhakta. And nirapeksha is somebody like a sannyasi, a babaji, who is so pure that they don't need to even demonstrate taking responsibility in this world. So this is how we should understand. And the first category of persons is Sannishta. Sannishta follow Varnashram. They are dependent on Varnashram duty for their purification. They perform acts and offer those acts to Krishna. They worship Krishna, but they use Varnashram as a means for purification. Yat karoshi yad ashnashi. This is a little higher than Varnashram, but still I'm giving that example. So point is, when activities are first performed and then offered, it becomes karma mishra. Whereas if we first offer devotion to Krishna and then whatever Krishna likes we perform, that is pure bhakti. So sannishta means, sannishta use Varnashram as their purification. They are dependent on Varnashram. A parinishtita is not dependent. So a sannishtita is dependent, whereas a parinishtita is only demonstrating. And a nirapeksha is directly performing bhakti and is disinterested in this world. So these are different categories in which Srila Balale Vidyabhushan categorizes devotees. So definitely we have to be at the level of parinishtita or nirapeksha. And according to Lord's teachings in the Gita, parinishtita is a safe space to be, because there is less scope of social unrest and fall down. So these were a few thoughts. Very beautiful section coming up in this chapter. Please stay tuned in. Any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhuji. If somebody has some things, we can they can carry on. We'll officially conclude the class.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu. I was just thinking, because I see the children. So we focus only on their developing devotion.
Prabhu, you can say a little loudly.
You're also this.
Now you just...
I'll repeat the question, Mataji.
No, you can hear, right? I mean, the priority should be to see that children develop devotion. So as you said in your class, now devotion becomes the most foundational. The Varna is there somewhere, which may not be so visible now. It is going to manifest. So you could give focus only devotion. And as they grow up with devotion, the Varna will start coming up. But because the devotion is there, that Varna will be properly aligned. Because engagement is needed in this world. So I'm just saying.
Correct.
So do we, talking about, you know, academics and... So is it a proper thing or no? But they have to face the world outside. So they need to know this.
Right.
We have to train them. So how do we... from your class, I heard, okay. You just...
The easiest thing to do is give a class. How to implement, that is the difficult part, which you have to do. I'll just share what I've heard.
I'm convinced about what you're saying.
Yeah. I'll...
devotion.
Sure.
You put him anywhere.
Yeah.
He will not get entangled.
Correct.
For anything he does, he will do with devotion.
Correct.
Because he has devotion.
Yeah. So what comes through this is that there cannot be a general answer. Because Srila Prabhupada says in one place in the Bhagavad Gita, you have to see what the candidate deserves. Prabhupada says if somebody deserves more and you give them less, that is also violence. So how ready is somebody for accepting pure bhakti? We don't know. So we have to start by offering that. That's what Srila Prabhupada did when he first went to the West. But then when he saw that some are not able to sustain that, then he also offered Varnashram. So it's always a good idea to start with default, because some, those who are ready, at least they may start. And they may also then lead. Because that's our movement is about pure bhakti. If we focus too much on Varnashram, too much on Swadharma, then we compromise the Swabhava. So therefore, our philosophy, sometimes it seems like, oh, why do they talk of renunciation so much more? It looks like a process for sannyasis. It is not. As we discussed, bhakti is primary and then Swadharma is also there. But my question is, even if somebody discovers their Swadharma very nicely and become excellent at it, till when will they do it? And for what will they do it? So if there is a strategy, if you have a game plan in mind that I will do this to gain credibility, to become accept responsibility, demonstrate to the world, then it is a good strategy. But if we are doing it for our gratification, for our own personal interests, then it has no end. Again, it will be serving our swabhava. So discovering this, our swadharma is a junction. Question is, after that, do you want to slip back into your swabhava or do you want to rise to your swarupa? Many people discuss only about swadharma. Understand your nature, follow your nature. That's fine. But till when? So therefore our discussions, Bhagavad Marg, Bhagavad Dharma is generally about swarupa. Swarupa is stressed more than swabhava. People like to discuss a lot on their swadharma. Because that's what they, you know, those who have a, by default humans have a tendency to do karma. And when you talk more about their swadharma, they also like it. But as soon as you start talking on topics of swarupa and seva, they get disinterested. So that's the challenge of a preacher. Swarupa is the goal. Swadharma is the means. Swadharma is not the end. So, like say a parent would want to encourage their child to do something which is not purely spiritual. So they can do it with a plan in mind, like using a thorn to remove a thorn. Not putting the thorn deeper or getting influenced by that child. Then it becomes reverse parenting. So if you have a plan in mind and a timeline in mind, then it is the right way to engage.
So I just one more question, of course not. So when you said the desires arise because of past experiences which we already had, and if the sense object is not there to trigger, the desires will not arise.
Desires will arise, anger will arise because we are not able to fulfill those desires. That is dvesha.
So then how do people sustain staying in isolation in the gufa and all?
That is the point. If they have not purified their desire, when they are meditating with their eyes closed, they'll only think of the objects their mind is attached to. Which is worse than somebody who is sincerely trying to purify themselves by following Varnashram. Because the mind is with you and the mind impressions of enjoyment are also with you. So by performing bhakti, by performing in the initial chapters, yajna, nishkam karma yog, akarma, by doing that, why is there regulation in scriptures? Prabhupada says in Ishopanishad, or I think it's Upadeshamrit, that we have a high fever. And in that high fever of conditioned life, if you want to enjoy, that is like eating fried items in jaundice or whatever. First job is to reduce the fever. Therefore, the regulations. You cannot live like an animal. Fulfill your desires, but in a regulated, civilized way. That is the check and balance system where our vasanas are purified. And the result of that is one uncovers their swarupa and then feels, oh, this is my real nature. Better I act according to my swarupa rather than fulfilling this endless desires from my own swabhava.
So, but in the history, like even now in Himalayas, there are people surviving for hundreds of years, living in isolation. How do they survive?
Question is purification. If they have purified their minds, we cannot judge by externals. We cannot judge a yogi by their externals. Somebody meditating in a cave could be pure, could not be pure. Somebody engaged in this world could be pure, could not be pure. The criteria is not position. The criteria is how purified are they. So that cannot be seen. And that is where exactly Parikshit Maharaj's question is coming from. Because he is seeing externals, household life. But that says nothing about the consciousness of Priyavrat Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj, who is giving such heavy instructions, Griha Andha Kupam, he himself lived with his family in his palace. But what consciousness did they live with? It's not the activity, it's the attitude. That is what Bhagavad Gita teaches us. So definitely we cannot judge others by externals. Nor should we try to bypass purification. So, yes, bro.
I wonder sometimes why Parikshit Maharaj is asking this question again. When he heard already that Prachetas were blessed after they had reached that level and then went back to their household life. They very successfully did it and they were liberated. So now again for Priyavrat is asking the same question.
Why is Arjun asking the same question in Bhagavad Gita? It is not as much for them as much it is for us. Because if Arjuna had not asked those questions, we would not have had Bhagavad Gita. 18 chapters, it would be maybe just 2 chapters. Then it would have been so difficult to follow.
So this is coming back to back, like the very next chapter again.
Yeah. Same with Bhagavad Gita. Lord just says, do nishkama karma. And then Arjun asking, you mean I should renounce, right? No act. You mean I should leave the battlefield? So that is the perfect student interaction of expecting or asking for elaboration. Because see, what happens in our general discussion also is very quickly for everything we say, just chant Hare Krishna. That is true. It's like, you know, if you have to go from 1 to 100, we know there is 10, 20, 30, 40. But what comes between 1 and 10? If you help someone understand that, they'll be more convinced of reaching 10. Otherwise, if somebody's at 5 and you always tell them, 100, 100, I know 100, but now I am at 10. Have you convinced me at 11 to take the next step? That is the whole journey of the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam questions. For everyone, what is the most difficult step? The next step. So we have to come to where they are and then give them what they need there. That is why Lord Krishna, Shukdev Goswami are so patient. They are not saying, samaj nahi aata kya tumko. They are understanding that Arjuna has this question because he is not convinced of something. Let me convince him of that. Let me clarify, elaborate. So it is a job of a teacher. A teacher should be able to present the same thing in 100 different ways. I satisfied
so,
you.
So thank you for answering my questions with a lot of patience.
No. This is my duty to please Radha Madan Gopal Prabhu. Yes, Mataji.
No, it's not a question.
Mm-hmm.
During your class, fortunately, I remembered one incident where Gurudev, you know, gave an instruction to one of his disciples where you're talking about how, you know, Priyatma, he was, you know, left everything and took to Grahastha Ashram. And, you know, we had one of our god brother going through difficulties during his marriage to such an extent. They were newly married, but they were separated for 3 years and they were thinking verge of going for divorce. And it was, I still remember date, it was January 13th. And he met Gurudev on January 11th. And it was already decided. They were supposed to go to Bandra court and take a divorce. And he went and spoke to Maharaj. And Maharaj said, he later on told something else to us. But Maharaj just told him that, I have spoken during your marriage. Just go and hear the class. Meditate what I spoke. Then take a decision. He went on 13th January. They came out without divorcing. So this thought came to me. Like you said, when you follow the principle, you know, Priyatma followed the principle of, you know, Grahastha Ashram, taking instruction from his guru, so he could perform his role. So, you know, Gurudev also felt, he said later on, the issue with the Grahastha Ashram, if you don't follow the principle of Grahastha Ashram, you're going to suffer. Mm-hmm. But you follow the principle, you can
absolutely
advance yourself. Just
from
a thought.
Every varna, from every ashram, you can achieve the same perfection. The question is, how sincerely are you following it? Somebody can be insincere in Brahmachari ashram. So the whole understanding is, don't go by externals. Try to get the essence. The essence is... And another thing Srila Prabhupada is going to say in the future verses, it might seem that Priyavrat Maharaj's journey is being, you know, deviated because he was on the verge of self-realization, sitting in the Gandhamadana mountain, doing meditation, and now he has to manage the kingdom. It seems like that. So Prabhupada says there are two ways by somebody's pursuit of self-realization can be checked. One is aparad. If we do aparad, we slide down. Other is the will of Krishna or his devotees. So here Brahmaji is willing for Parikshit, for Priyavrat Maharaj to do something. So it seems that it is an obstruction, because it is a will of Krishna's devotee, it will eventually again blossom like it was. So who is giving that instruction also carries a lot of weight. So if Maharaj is saying something, then whatever he says, irrespective of how we take, how it externally might seem to be, it is called blessing, siddha. Because see, you can make progress by performing, by sadhana or by kripa. So when a pure devotee tells you to do something, it might seem that you are not following the process, but you will again get the same perfection because it is kripa siddhi, not sadhana siddhi. It might seem that, oh my God, I am going to lose my sadhana. I will not be able to meditate on Krishna's lotus feet in Gandhamadan mountain. But in that, kripa siddhi is hidden. Just by following the desires of a pure devotee, we will get the same salvation. So who is it coming from is also very important. And Maharaj, in all his addresses and Maharajas, he says the same thing. Look at your partner as a son or a daughter of Krishna, and the purpose should not be to... See, again, Griha Vrata means I'm looking at someone for fulfilling my need or fulfilling my insecurity. Whereas Grihast Ashram or any ashram is, we support each other together to serve Krishna. There's no question of my need being fulfilled through you. I'll help you in your need to serve Krishna, and you help me in my need to serve Krishna. When that becomes the basis, there is no... We are not in a relationship to take. We are there only to give. So sometime Prabhupada is going to say this in a purport later. A parent who is Krishna conscious will take the best care of their children but still not be attached to them. What is the difference between attachment and affection? In attachment, it is only about responsibility. It is only about, in affection, it is only about giving and fulfilling one's responsibility. In attachment, we do anything keeping in mind what will I gain from him. Because I want my need to be fulfilled, therefore I am acting out of attachment. So whenever we bring Krishna consciousness into anything, it becomes pure in relationships, in everything. So yeah, these are like very beautiful principles, and you have, you know, lived this and seen this for so many years in your life. You have much more realized knowledge. So again, we have to go back to these cardinal principles and keep reminding ourselves. Because the tendency of the material mind is to get attracted by gossips and sensations and externals. So this is what Priya Parikshit Maharaj is teaching us. Don't go by gossips and situations, go by principles. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanande, Hari Hari Bol, Rancha Kalpata Rugasya, Kripa Sindhu Vyayavacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namo.